Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Engineering Side of Data. We're going to be talking about the Snowflake Summit 2023, and I've got a great guest here to help me do that. His name is Roy Hassan. Roy, please introduce yourself.
Sure. Hey, thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me. My name is Roy Hassan. I'm the head of product at Upsolver. Upsolver is a very simple-to-use data integration solution for Snowflake. Attended the Snowflake Summit. A lot of really cool features and services and discussions happening. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation and share what I learned.
Nice. And I'm not surprised that you've ended up in product. I think I met you about 4 or 5 years ago when you were still at AWS. And I think it was an AWS immersion day, and you did an excellent job of tying all of these disparate systems that AWS is offering in the data platform and doing a really good job of presenting it as kind of a seamless idea. So not surprising that you ended up in product. And a great talk. And it really stuck with me. So
I appreciate it.
Thank you for that.
Hopefully I can do the same thing here.
Yeah, and thanks for coming on the show. So, yeah, let's get right into it. Yeah, Snowflake Summit 2023 just wrapped up in Las Vegas last week. Of course, a lot of buzz about this one. What are some of your impressions of the conference?
Yeah, so honestly, I really liked it. I think there was a really good turnout of both customers of Snowflake and also vendors and partners that are building solutions around it. Overall, I think the kind of the key messages that I've heard is bring your workloads to data and just make the common use cases, the most popular use cases, as simple and as easy as possible. And then the rest of the kind of the announcements were really around bringing workloads to data. And I have a bunch of themes that kind of jump to mind that I think are the most disruptive or the most exciting ones that we can jump into. But overall, really good turnout, a lot of good conversations. The happy hours were awesome. Get to meet a lot of different people. And actually, in person, most people you see them online, on Zoom. It's cool to see people in person. And a lot of people are much taller than what they look like on Zoom. So that's been
yeah, that's right. You got to get the height reconciliation, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's good. And yeah, it's probably, again, you probably seen some people we haven't seen in a long time and met some new faces. You know, obviously, due to the pandemic, things are full swing again with the conference. So that's really good. How many people were at this conference, you estimate?
I think overall they mentioned between 10,000 to 12,000. I think actually in person, probably less than that, maybe 8 or 9. I'm just ballparking here. Like I don't have an official number, but it was a large number of people. Definitely the keynote was very oversubscribed. I mean, there was a main hall that had completely packed, and I think there was 5 overflow rooms with 100 plus people in it. So it was very very well attended, I would say.
Nice. How would you compare it to something like AWS reInvent or another conferences you've been to in the past?
AWS is big. AWS is really, really big. The reInvent is a lot of people, a lot of different topics. You know, you have people that are very focused on data, some on machine learning, some on just gaming or you know, infrastructure. So there's kind of pockets of interest. It was harder to kind of find your community and the people that you can share your experience with and talk about the services. I think that was difficult with AWS, but I think with you know, with Snowflake, the Snowflake Summit, everybody cared about data. Everybody cared about analytics. So it was really easy to kind of just hear somebody talking about something, jump into the conversation, or even in a room when you're listening to a presentation, it's kind of cool. You can turn around to the other side and say like, hey, what do you think about this? And everybody was interested in the same stuff that you are. So that was really helpful.
Really resonated with me about the kind of the common interests of Snowflake. Everybody's interested in data. So the chances that the person standing next to you in line for the next session is going to be interested in data, and you're going to have a common thing to start up a conversation about. That is a lot different than something like AWS, where I feel like I've been to a couple different reInvents in the past, and if just by sheer luck, if I have some good engagement with folks, they're, you know, in at the lunch table or at a happy hour, again, yeah, sheer luck that I found somebody that had some common interest in data. Whereas Snowflake, obviously, it's hard to say 12,000 is a small number of folks, but by comparison, it certainly is, and you have a better chance of having meaningful conversations about what you're interested in. So
yeah, even the first day, I was wearing my my Apache Iceberg T-shirt and sitting in the in the cafeteria eating lunch, and you know, people just saw my T-shirt and just sat down and started talking about it, like, oh, nice. You know, we use Iceberg too, and so I think that's pretty awesome. So just having a conference with so many people who like the same stuff, which in the same stuff was really neat. And that's probably the biggest difference in my mind compared to like reInvent, that just try to cover so many different topics. Was still very hard to get into sessions, just like at reInvent. and that's a good thing, right? But yeah, it was good. A lot of good conversation. Even at the booth, right? We had a booth for Upsolver, just walking around, people coming in, asking a lot of questions. It was very lively discussions, and people were very open to talk about it. I think a lot of the conversations were around what we thought about Snowpark Container Service. That was like one of the big announcements at this conference. And we can jump into kind of what that is, but I kept hearing people talking about it. Snowflake, you know, Snowpark Container Service. What is it going to mean for the industry? What is it? How do we use it? How do we build on it? And you know, so that was pretty neat to hear those conversations.
Yeah. When I was trying to keep up with the announcements and kind of the goings on at the Snowflake Summit this year, that was probably the single most thing that I heard the most about was the Snowpark Container Services. A lot of press on this one. A lot of people are excited about that. So yeah, I tell you what, that's a good segue into, why don't we get into some of the announcements that caught your eye? And it sounds like Snowpark Container Services is a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the themes perspective, right, there was a lot of conversations around bringing workloads to data. So what does it mean from a compute perspective, right? What kind of compute options and services can Snowflake offer for you to bring those workloads into the Snowflake ecosystem so you can write on top of the data? There's another set kind of theme around machine learning and LLM and Gen AI, kind of all the things that we've been hearing about for the last several months. And then a little bit more on kind of the native analytics, right? Dynamic tables and Iceberg and some of those things. So I'd like to talk about some of those things that kind of came to mind that I think are really big differentiators in the market and kind of exciting. The first one was the Snowpark Container Service. If you don't know, Snowpark is basically like this compute service that runs on top of the Snowflake Cloud. It's for running non-warehouse workloads. So you typically see Python workloads, Spark-related workloads, data processing, ETLing, some machine learning on top of that. But it was mainly focused on, you know, you bring your code to Snowflake, to Snowpark, and then you execute it. With this new Snowpark Container Service, you can actually bring your own containers, right? So this is a Kubernetes-based implementation that Snowflake offers you a number of compute options, CPU, GPU type of options. And then you bring your Docker container with, you know, some application spec, right? Like how you want your containers to work, what ports to expose, those kind of things. And then you just deploy it on top of Snowpark. And that's it. It has its own image registry. It has its own, obviously, compute environment, its own monitoring, and everything is done through the Snowflake interface, through SQL, right? So there'll be a create service. There'll be a create service function, create job. And that's really, really interesting way to do it. So I think there's three kind of main components to that service. The first one is what they call services. So you can actually launch applications. So you saw that in the demos a lot, and also in the keynote where they launched basically Hex, like a Jupyter notebook on top of Snowpark, right? So you say, here is my Docker container that contains the Jupyter installation. Here's a spec, you know, what port I want to open. And then I want a public endpoint, meaning that I can connect to it from any machine. And then it just, pretty fast. I mean, it was, you know, I don't know, under a minute. Then you have a container running, you put up the URL in your browser, and now you have, you know, a notebook, and you log into it with the same login as Snowflake. So you don't need to manage multiple credentials. It's the same RBAC, right? The same login, the same permissions. That makes it super, super simple. And then you have this idea of a notion of jobs. So commonly in machine learning, you want to train a model, right? So you want to say, I want to read data from these tables, push it into the model, and then just run and train the model. This basically allows you to create these jobs that just kind of run in the background on Snowflake compute that you decide. And they do things, right? They do stuff. They don't have an endpoint. You don't connect to them. You just think of them as like these functions that you just push data into, and then they do stuff.
Okay, so like a little bit of an orchestration, kind of an orchestration function of sorts. Is that what would you say, how you would describe jobs?
No, it's just more like it's like I have a container and I want to run it. Like I don't want to interface with it. I just want to run it because it has some logic that it needs to do. That's it. Right. So like if I have a model that I want to train, I just have to feed the data and that's it. Once it's done, it generates a model output. And then I want to use that in the next thing, which is what they call a service function. Right. So now that you have some piece of code, again, it's a container. You can give it. You can give it the spec, like what ports to open, those kind of things. So now if you want to do inference, right, if you want to say, okay, I developed a model with my job. Now I want to serve that model to my users. You can actually host it on top of Snowflake, right? So the first one is services, which is, think of them as apps that you can run on top of Snowflake. Second one is service functions, which are containers that you can execute kind of like headless applications, right? You can just execute. And then, that was jobs. And then service functions are basically, again, headless applications that just have a REST API that you can call them and you can get information back. So it's almost like running your own Kubernetes service, but everything runs on top of Snowflake with direct, easy access to the data.
Oh, wow. And I also saw some announcements that they had some partners that they were naming, like Blue Yonder, that they were talking about, hey, we're going to start migrating some of our workloads to the Snowpark container services. That's really going to be interesting to see how that service develops, how it evolves over time. I think some of these things, like, you know, your model example, like a no-brainer, right? Data people are going to love it. You know, we don't want to have a Kubernetes cluster that we're going to maintain and, you know, and all this, all the headaches associated with that. It'd be great if we can just use this container services.
That's right.
But yeah, some of the other workloads, I guess I'm skeptical, you know, how much they're going to, you know, they're going to convince software devs to start running things on this thing. I guess it remains to be seen.
That's going to remain to be seen. But I definitely think this is a game changer in a way that, and somebody explained this to me like on the floor, right, where, you know, the idea kind of made sense to me, but I had the same kind of thought, right? Like, it's kind of small. When I'm doing ML stuff on top of data, fine, I don't have to take data out. But if you think about it, right, if you take a step back and you think about it, just how many applications today derive value from the physical data that we have, right? Yeah. Whether it's in the warehouse or in a traditional database, we derive a lot of value from that data. So if I can bring those applications over, like SaaS, right? SaaS, right? There's you know, lots of stuff that you can do. You know, maybe a data catalog, right? Like, why does a data catalog need to sit outside? Why can't I build that on top of Snowflake, where 99% of the data that the data catalog is referencing is the data in Snowflake, right?
Yeah.
So I think you're going to start seeing more and more of these applications right on top of this container service, because it's a container, right? It's a Docker container. You can put anything on it. Like, it doesn't have to be anything special. And you can just run your code on it. You don't need to host anything. You don't need to deploy anything in a customer account, which is difficult, right? There's security restrictions you got to deal with. There's deployment issues you got to deal with. Management, scaling, all those things. Like, as an application vendor, like, you don't need to deal with that, right? You launch it on top of the Snowflake environment. Security is handled for you. RBAC is handled for you. Scaling, elasticity, all that's handled for you. You know, time to market much, much faster, right? Yeah. So I think that there's a ton of value in this. And I think this is going to be a game changer in how we build applications, especially around data analytics and ML. The question remains to be seen, is this going to scale, Like where is the breaking point, right? Because if I have an application served off of this container service and it's serving my customers and I have 100,000 requests per second, can this handle it, right? Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. If I'm Netflix, probably won't be building on top of this. But if I'm a smaller company, this is a great way to get started.
Yeah. Scaling and pricing. I guess we'll see how everything gets sorted out in those two areas. And I do, security, you mentioned that. That was also kind of hit the highlights a couple of times in some of my review they push this idea. It's like, hey, why drag your data out of this area, out of this domain known as Snowflake? Let's keep it all in one spot. You don't have to worry about issues of security.
That's right.
The data gravity thing was also brought up a couple of times. Yeah, they certainly have an appealing use case, and someone's asking for this, right? They didn't go build it on a whim. So potentially there are some big players, influential players in this space that have said, hey, it would be really good if we can run more apps right in Snowflake. So this will be one to watch and see how, what this looks like in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if we kind of shift gears a little bit to the ML piece, there's a bunch of demos on machine learning. They did some LLM demo where they uploaded some PDFs. And then it ran, it kind of built the model and then you can ask questions on it. It was okay. It wasn't super exciting. I mean, we've seen a million of those demos already. But I think the point that really kind of resonated with me is the ability to kind of train existing models on top of Snowflake data, bring your own models, and even, take models from Hugging Face or whatever else that you want, bring them into Snowflake through containers, and then train your data on it. But again, you bring in those elements into Snowflake, and Snowflake just gives you the compute environment to do it, right? So there's Snowpark ML that lets you do pre-processing. They use scikit-learn and some other libraries, and then you can do training all directly there. So things that you used to do outside in a notebook or in some other containers, now you can just do it on top of Snowpark. And you don't really need custom UDFs or, any kind of special functions. Mm-hmm. It's just something built into the platform. And the thing that really worked well when we looked at this stuff is that Snowflake, the team who built this, really focused on ease of use. It's really easy to add a container service or add a function that says calls an external API and train something. But it's really hard to do it easy, to do it in a simple way that anybody can just pick it up and go. And that was the other thing that really resonated with me throughout the entire summit, is that bring workload to the data is one thing, but make it super easy for anybody to use is really hard. And I think they got it right in a lot of these components. And of course, there'll be iterations, they'll make it better, but that's really, really hard to do. And I know for my time at AWS, it's hard to do. I mean, it's hard to get things easy enough, but still give the users power and flexibility. And I think Snowflake did a really, really good job at that.
Yeah, they continue to hit that mark pretty well, right? Arguably at the cost of velocity, maybe, but they certainly like that idea. They push that one platform idea, and it really shows. I mean, they're like you just stated, everything looks and feels like it belongs together, and they give you several different ways to access your information without seeming overwhelming or distracted.
That's right.
So hats off to them for that, for sure. And noticed.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And all the APIs and all the kind of the interfaces are all inside of SQL. So when I talked about the container service, you don't really have to know anything. I mean, you create your container, your Kubernetes spec file, your YAML file. And then from within Snowflake, right, it's create service. You give it your, your compute pool, which instance types you want, how many nodes you want in your pool. And then you point it to that spec, and that's it, right? You have a service up and running. They do everything behind the scenes. They launch the containers. If it's multiple containers in your pod, they just launch them all separately, right? They handle all that stuff for you. You don't have to worry about anything. And then you can just simply write show service or something like that. And you get, your table and you see all the things that you created. So it's all from the same interface. simple to use. You can do it through their Python interface in Snowpark. You can do it through the CLI. You can do it directly in the SQL interface. So they thought about, I think, almost everything. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds like they've nailed it once again. Yeah. So what else for Snowpark ML? Anything else that caught your eye?
Yeah, so I think Snowpark ML was, you know, some of the pre-processing stuff. They added a model registry and a container registry built into the product. So now you don't have to manage those things independently. Obviously model hosting. So once you built your model, now you can actually deploy it on Snowpark and you can host it as an endpoint. So your users can hit it. If you wanted to, you can call it directly from your SQL, right? So now that you're hosting a model, you can create a UDF that basically takes, you know, a column or two, whatever many columns you want, and call that interface with and get the predictions back, right? Nice. So that makes it super easy if you want to integrate machine learning or inference into your queries. You can do it very, very easily. So I really like that idea. They also had an interesting feature. They call it the file set API. It's basically a way for you to materialize a SQL query or the results of a SQL query into Parquet files, right? So things like PyTorch and TensorFlow, like they don't really connect to a database. Like there's no good interface for that. They pick files from an object store, right? So that's always been a problem. Like, okay, I run a query on Snowflake. How do I get the data out? How do I save it out? So now there's a file set API that makes that easy to do. So you can write a query, dump all that data into Parquet files or CSV file, and then pick it up in your TensorFlow or PyTorch libraries. That makes it really easy. So I think, again, that's simplifying the user's life. Like, I may not want to do my training on top of Snowflake. That's my choice. Yeah. I still want to use PyTorch on my environment, but just make it easy for me to take data out. They did that with a faucet API. So I appreciate that they're thinking about that as well. It's not just, hey, come use all of our stuff, realizing that people would want to use their own stuff on their own environment, and making it easy for them to get data out is really important. So that was another cool thing that kind of popped to my attention.
So what's next?
Yeah. So I think the other one that was really exciting was native apps. Initially, when I heard about native apps, it sounded very similar to the container service. But the main difference between them is container service, you can bring your own container, your code, everything belongs to you. The native apps is slightly different. Native app is basically a way for you to build a simple app, and you can use Streamlit, which is a company that they acquired a little while ago. It's basically like allow you to build UI on top of data. So it kind of feels like a notebook experience, but you can build UI. But it interfaces with, you know, the native primitives inside of Snowflake, right? So Streamlit for visualization. You can connect to Snowpark if you wanted to use some of those functions. You can connect to data sharing. So if you want to say, hey, I got my data and I want to share it with somebody else, but the SQL interface for sharing is a little hard. So I want to build a UI on top of that, right, that lets me browse data sets and click and share, right? You can do that on top of native apps. And of course, interact with like the data warehouse so you can run queries. So there was, I think it was Capital One, they built an application, I think it was called Slingshot, where basically they run a bunch of queries and they do a lot of analysis and they give you information about your usage of Snowflake, right? So you can see all your usage statistics, you can see how much you're paying. It can build some early prediction about like what your cost is going to be. So those are kind of like native apps, right? And that's again, really powerful. And both for native apps and for container service, I forgot to mention this earlier, but they're both available in the Snowflake marketplace, right? So if you built this, you can actually monetize it. You can put it on the marketplace. It's easy for people to find. It's easy for people to deploy. Because once you click deploy, it launches the app, it asks you for permissions, and that's it. You're done. Like you don't really have to worry about anything else. Everything is still using the Snowflake, RBAC and access controls and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, your IT team don't have to worry about somebody open up some weird ports or having to set up another LDAP connection or something like that, everything is, you know, inside of Snowflake, which makes it super easy to just find new applications and deploy it. So, you know, native apps, pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen the comparisons to the, you know, Apple App Store, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Use, you know, the fact that if you download it, you know, you're getting something that's been vetted and works well within your environment. So that's that's not to be understated, right? That's a huge selling point. And And Streamlit seems like it's come to like the de facto way to develop, you know, kind of interactive dashboards within Python. Yeah. So that's a nice get. Another one of those things that appeals to developers and data scientists alike. So
it's really well integrated into the native app ecosystem and also into container service. So Snowflake did a really good job at making sure not to make it a third wheel, just to kind of put it front and center and make sure that people use it and understand how to use it. And, you know, from the demos and the little bit that I played with it, you know, it's really easy to use. And it's really easy to build applications. I think the biggest sort of takeaway is kind of like, what is the impact to the industry, right? What is the impact to all the different vendors in the market, Absolver included, right? You know, we all build solutions that deliver value on top of the Snowflake data warehouse, but now with the container service and native apps, how much of that logic that exists in a vendor space can be migrated to the Snowflake space, right? You can think about connectors, for example, right? There's lots of vendors out there that have different source connectors, you know, SaaS, APIs, et cetera, that load data into Snowflake as the primary use case. Now I don't necessarily need to buy another product. I don't need to manage another product, right? I should be able to just click on a native app, pick Salesforce connector, Marketo, you know, whatever, and then just deploys it in my Snowflake environment. That's it. I don't have to manage anything. You know, obviously there's a cost to it, but it's significantly lower than what the cost would be for a third vendor, right? Right. Yeah, to buy a vendor, support contracts, you know, monitoring, maintenance, all those kind of things. Yeah. So I think it's going to change a lot. I think in the industry overall, we had, you know, very, very sort of like widespread adoption of like new services and new tools and just proliferation of so many different options to solve same problems. But there's just too many options now. There's too many tools, too many ways to solve the same problems. Do we really need all that? Do we really need all these options? I think this native apps and container service on Snowflake is going to help consolidate a lot of the tools that we have in the industry. Right, there's really no need to have, you know, 15 vendors who do connectors. Each one of them has 300, 400, 500 connectors. Like, do I really need that? Right? Yeah. Maybe they can focus on building those connections on top of Snowflake, and they can still make money, but less companies for people to deal with. Right? Makes things a lot simpler.
Yeah, if you're a Snowflake user, chances are you can probably trim up your tool belt a little bit. Reduce the number of tools that you have. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's about ease of use and lowering your cost. There is, of course, a lock-in component to it. I mean, you know, you can build everything on top of the Snowflake environment. And, you know, if something happens in the future and you decide you want to leave Snowflake, it's much harder, right? So it's not like Snowflake is the only vendor in the market. Is of course Databricks, and there's AWS, there's BigQuery, there's lots of options out there. But for the users for the companies who are invested and put all their kind of eggs in the Snowflake basket, this is a fantastic, you know, cloud, that the data cloud that they can do almost everything they want on, right?
Yeah. And good for some of those partners too, right? Like you noted, you can monetize your apps and I think it was maybe, I don't know when they announced like the data marketplace, but that's another way that their partners can monetize things. So that's nice to attract those folks as well. But
that's right. And they tie it all together. This is the key, right? Like a lot in other places, I noticed this with AWS, especially like when you have like a data marketplace, it's a data marketplace. when you have an app marketplace, is a separate app marketplace. Bringing those two together is kind of like your problem, right? Now you got to figure out how to bring those two together. Snowflake said, like, I gave you data, I gave you, container marketplace, app marketplace, but I stitched it all together for you. So like, if you want to move data from one point to the other, or one app access this data share over here, or create a new data, like it's all done for you. Like, you don't have to build the glue that connects it all. They do it all for you. And there's goods and bads, right? But I think for what people want to do with Snowflake, and Snowflake is the ease of use sort of story, right? They really nailed it. They really did a good job at that.
It's what made them popular in the first place, and they're sticking to it. Yep.
That's right. So then, like, so some of the other stuff, so these aren't like big, you know, industry shakers, but things that kind of caught my eye. I think the one that was really interesting is unifying Iceberg tables. So traditionally or initially they had, Snowflake had external Iceberg tables, and it had an internal managed Iceberg table that was in kind of like private preview. They basically took the two together, and they basically unified the two under the same sort of umbrella as Iceberg tables. So there's the concept of Iceberg tables, and in an Iceberg table, there's a managed and an unmanaged, right? So the managed one, there's basically no external table, so you don't have to manage like stages and tasks and those kind of things. There's a new concept called external volume, right? So you kind of say, like, my data lives in this S3 bucket. I connect to it. There's also a concept of a catalog integration. So if you wanted to say, you know, maybe I'm already using Glue Catalog, I'm already using Tabular's Iceberg Catalog, I can connect to that, right? Or I can use my own Snowflake Catalog. And then you can create your tables that way, right? Create the tables, and then Snowflake manages all of it, right? All the optimizations like compaction and ordering the data and all that kind of fun stuff is all managed by Snowflake. And of course, there's APIs, so you can access it if you wanted to from other engines. And then external engines can also write data into this managed table, right? So if you have a Spark engine, for example, that's generating the data, it can write and update the Parquet files, right? The physical files for your table, and then Snowflake will kind of pick it up and make sure that it's all there and working. And then so, the unmanaged one is pretty much external table. I just kind of renamed. But you can read external catalogs. You can point to, if you have a completely separate Iceberg table that created by, you know, whoever, right? You can just point to it and just read it as an external table. You do have to refresh the data a bit manually, right? That's not really there. So if changes are happening outside of Snowflake, there's no really way for them to update that. So you have to manually kind of run a command and say, update the external catalog. But it's fairly easy. And then what they did was, which kind of nice, is that they built the functionality to migrate from one to the other, right? So if you start with an external table, because it's easier, you already have it, you can migrate that with a simple SQL command. You can migrate that workload into a managed Iceberg table. And now Snowflake manages everything for you, and life becomes a lot easier.
Nice. They certainly, that's a nice a marketing deal right there, right? Make it really easy to get to the managed world. How is, from my understanding, the performance is also similar, right? Between unmanaged and managed. That was one of the things that they responded to. They announced this idea of Apache Iceberg support last year, and there was this difference in performance quite a bit, but now it's closer, right? Is that fair to say?
So the performance comparison is between Iceberg managed tables and Snowflake native tables. So Snowflake native tables with their own format, the performance difference is very, very small. Right now, the native tables are slightly better, but the performance difference is very, very small. Between managed Iceberg and unmanaged Iceberg, there's still a fair bit of gap. Like, the unmanaged is not as performant as the managed, but they acknowledged it in the presentation, and they kind of said, like, hey, look, we're working on this. We're going to make this better. And I think overall the Iceberg community is going to make it better. Between managed and unmanaged, there's still a performance gap. But between managed Iceberg and native format, there's almost no difference. right?
Wow.
So now what you're kind of like, do I use Iceberg managed tables or do I use the native format? They're really trying to make it as simple as possible, so you don't really have to worry about it. It's only if you say, like, look, as a company, we want to make a decision that we don't want to have our data locked into a single vendor. We really want an open format, and Iceberg is the choice that we've made, but we don't want to get penalized for performance, right? And external tables penalized you. Now with Manage Iceberg, you get the same performance as native Snowflake without the kind of the perceived lock-in of having your data in the Snowflake native format. Yeah. I think it's a win-win for customers.
Yeah. And that sounds incredibly impressive too. I think obviously, Lakehouse has become a very hot topic as of late. And I think one of potentially the cons of it is that you simply can't match the performance typically of something like, a Snowflake data warehouse or Redshift or anything like that. But if you're saying that, hey, they've closed the gap significantly in that area, that's very interesting. Then I start wondering about what's the price difference between having these managed Iceberg tables versus Snowflake native tables, right? What's the pros and cons with that and storage costs and things like that? But that is huge. And yeah, it definitely makes things more interesting in the Lakehouse space, right? That's arguably been dominated by Databricks for some time now. So yeah, that's really interesting.
No, I think it's going to be an interesting game changer, because Databricks announced, at their conference running around the same time as the Snowflake one, they announced Lakehouse Federation, where, you can run a query inside of Databricks and it can actually reach out to different engines and kind of federate the query, right? So instead of moving everything into the Lakehouse, you query the data in place. Right, it was just something that Trino Presto was doing really, really well. Now they're doing it. They also announced support for Iceberg and Hoodie manifests as part of Delta Lake. So now from Delta Lake, you can actually ask it to generate an Iceberg manifest, so that same Delta table is accessed through the Iceberg interfaces. Right. So now if you have Databricks writing data into Delta Lake with the export to Iceberg function, now you can read those same tables from Snowflake without Snowflake supporting Delta, right? I still have some reservations about that approach from a technical perspective. It's a bit of a one-way street, right? So like not to dive too deep into this, but like with Delta, Delta is the first class citizen. And then periodically when you make changes, it updates the Iceberg manifest. Right. But if there's any delays, if there's any issues in updating the Delta manifest, Iceberg kind of takes a back seat. Right. Mm-hmm. So your Iceberg tables will most likely be behind the Delta Lake from a, from a freshness perspective. And then you can't update the Iceberg tables and then carry those updates over to Databricks, and you don't get all the performance benefits that Delta gives you. So to me, it's an interesting approach. I don't really know how valuable it's going to be in the long term, but we'll see. I think it's good that we're starting to kind of come together and realize, like, hey, we don't need three formats. We really need one format. We just need them all to interop with each other. But how we get to the full interop is going to take some time.
Yes. Yeah. And it sounds like that first step is pretty much in the marketing bullet integration phase right now. Yep. Check. Yeah, we do it. Never mind.
Exactly.
Never mind the fine print. I think people have been talking about this for a long time, that Databricks and Snowflake have been converging in their spaces, but wow, they're really starting to get into the same territory, it sounds like, for sure.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, Snowpark and Snowpark Container Service is really starting to encroach on the ML workloads that Databricks was kind of like championing and probably being one of the leaders in that space. I think the data engineering workloads, I think Snowflake still has a little bit of a ways to go with Snowpark. Databricks definitely has a lead there. Mm-hmm. Databricks has majority of their workloads are data engineering workloads, but there's a lot of options now. Like, you can start doing them in Snowpark, not as easy, not as baked, but it's getting there. But the ML workloads, those are the big ones, right? Those are the ones that, you know, they use up a ton of compute, GPU, very expensive compute. So that's from a revenue perspective, that's kind of where you want to be, right? That's, those are the money makers. So I think Snowflake is pretty, you know, head to head with Databricks on this one. So it's going to be an interesting race to see who's going to lead that. And honestly, I mean, Databricks, I think, is done a really good job, and it's a really good solution for engineers. And it's focused very heavily on the engineer, the developer experience, where Snowflake has sort of elevated the game and say, like, look, developers are great, but they don't really want to write a ton of code. They, you know, yes, they have to do it today, but it's not something they really want to do, right? If we can eliminate a lot of the complexities and make it easier for them, they're also going to benefit. It's not a no-code, low-code experience kind of thing. It's still a developer experience, but they're just making all the frameworks, the deployments, the, you know, the management, like all those low-hanging fruit, pain, you know, paper cuts, they're kind of making them go away. And that makes life a lot easier for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely seemed like the announcements, there was obviously a handful that catered towards, you know, developers, engineers, and a handful that catered towards the data scientist crowd, both which they're trying to get more of. They're trying to get more of those workloads to Snowflake. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
So the last couple of things I wanted to mention was something called so streaming. Streaming is something that we've been talking about for a long time. It's always been kind of sitting on a back burner for most companies, especially in the world of analytics, right? Because the response is always like, hey, streaming is great, but you know what? Our dashboards don't need to be up to the second updated, and streaming is just more complicated from an architecture perspective. We don't need it right now. We'll do it later. But I think as we get more and more into, you know, online training, right? Constantly training our models, online inference, right? I want to, you know, get recommendations, et cetera, for my models. I want to keep them updated, right? Our users, everybody's interacting with our applications all real time, right? I want to get these events in real time. Streaming is starting to come front and center. And I think it took a few years, and we felt this pain with Absolver. I mean, we've been around for about 8 years trying to sell stream processing, stream ingestion. Nobody wanted to talk to us, right? Because like, streaming is not a big deal for analytics. Where we actually got a lot of traction is in ad tech, in gaming, in IoT, in places where stream ingestion is the only way to do it. And you need to be able to respond to events in real time, right? So like ad tech, like you can't sit there and say like, I'll give you an ad in a minute when I'm done processing this. Like this has to be in milliseconds. And that's kind of that was the big one. And now because of machine learning and because of the need to provide faster recommendations and faster suggestions and make your application much more responsive, streaming is coming front and center, right? So it was really great to see Snowflake sort of recognizing that streaming is not a side project. Streaming is something that customers want and need. They're just a little worried about the current architectures of streaming because it's different. It's harder to work with. It's harder to troubleshoot. It's harder to deal with. So Snowflake kind of took that on and said, like, look, we're not a real-time streaming engine, but we are going to allow you to get very, very fresh. So down to the minute at this point, but they built a streaming Snowpipe. So Snowpipe is the way to get data into Snowflake. They added a streaming support to it. So now there's an API that you can call and you can load data in a streaming manner. They released an SDK. They released a Kafka connector that you can launch on Kafka Connect. So that makes it a lot easier. But they also, another thing that they did really, really cool was that they introduced something called dynamic tables. They introduced this last year. Originally, it was materialized views, which is kind of what it is. And then they renamed it to dynamic tables. In the past, when you're trying to do stuff in real time with your tables in Snowflake, you needed to sort of load data into a table. Then you need to create a stream that listens to changes. And then you have to create these tasks that operate on that stream and does something, right? So if you wanted to do like a merge, like an update or delete, you listen to the raw table. Whenever you see an update or delete operation, you then execute a task that merges those changes into your final table. So dynamic tables kind of wraps it all together into one component. So you can create a dynamic table. You give it a SQL query that will do the transformations that you want it to do. And then you basically tell it how frequently you want it to run. So that's as much as you have to configure for a dynamic table. So you say, run this, you know, every minute. And it basically listens to the raw data or to the stream coming in. And it just runs a query on the data and just materializes it in real time. And because it's treated as a native table, you can do everything you can with Snowflake on it. You can include it in joins. You can include it in views. You can, you know, use it through Snowpark. You can use it everywhere. It's just like a regular table, which is super powerful because materialized views tend to have some limitations. You can't always use them the same way, but dynamic tables, they're just like regular tables. So that's really, really powerful. So those are kind of the things that got me excited towards the end there. Streaming. I love to see streaming, you know, being picked up by a big vendor. Confluent made a big change when they bought Amarok, which was a managed Flink service. They bought them, they acquired them recently, a few months ago. To me, that was a big indication that, you know, streaming is becoming mainstream now, right? And Snowflake picking this up is awesome to see. Redshift, Amazon Redshift a few months ago, release support for stream ingestion. So you can connect Kafka and Kinesis directly into Redshift. There's lots of vendors in this space right now. You know, Estuary, I mean, of course, Upsolver, you know, StreamCap's another one. There's a few others that are doing stream ingestion, stream processing. So it's really awesome to see it. I think that's really the future, especially when you couple it with machine learning and LLMs and the container service. So I'm really excited. I mean, this has been a long time in the making. So I'm happy to see Snowflake kind of jumping on the bandwagon with streaming and helping all of our community kind of bring that forward in an easy way.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw some of the demonstrations for the dynamic tables, very impressive stuff. And, you know, they showed, hey, this is what it looked like with all the merge and all the conditions and how you'd have to kind of write all this out by hand and then show the declarative nature of the dynamic tables. So it's very impressive. Yeah. And I would agree. I think that with streaming, it's coming. And it may not have been it's not here yet entirely. It's taking a little while longer than everybody thought, much like a lot of things do that are hyped up initially, but it's undoubtedly coming for a lot of folks out there.
Yeah, I will add the distinction that I've been trying to communicate on like my LinkedIn posts, you know, over the years is that streaming is less interesting when it comes to analytics, right? Like my dashboards don't necessarily have to be updated every minute or every second. Where streaming becomes really important is, first of all, keeping your data up, you know, fresh, because dashboards aren't the only things using it. So keeping them fresh is one thing. And the second one is, you know, the only way vendors or companies these days win in the market is by being first, by differentiating and differentiating fast, right? Like if your recommendation to my product, you know, shopping cart is slow and not very good, it's not a good experience. And people have so many options these days that they will just move. They'll just go somewhere else. And I see this with our customers and customers I work with in AWS. I mean, that was the way to differentiate it. Like they don't have different products. They don't have a lot of other differentiation is in the user experience. If I can make it snappy and fast and give you the best recommendation and make it the most personal experience, I'm going to win you. Right? I'm going to get you to stay with me. And the second I fall back and I'm like, my experience isn't as good. It's not as personal as I wanted to. I'm going to switch. I got lots of options these days. So like, why stick around? And streaming is the way to do this, right? We need to respond to events as they happen. Like we can't sit there and wait for it. We can't have models that are old and using old, you know, old event data from my experience when I was a week ago when I was buying something, right? No, everybody hates going to Amazon.com and seeing a product recommendation for something I already bought a week ago. Like, I don't want to see that again, right?
Yeah.
Point. I'm excited about streaming becoming, you know, the next big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, that's an excellent point about, this is less about reflecting real-time information in dashboards. Those are strategic decisions that are being made off of those dashboards. The people in corner offices are looking at those. The streaming stuff, by and large, is meant for the more tactical decisions that need to be made and helping folks out there, like product recommendations, like you stated. And it's good that if Snowflake is saying, hey, bring your apps to Snowflake, you better have that streaming right. thing figured out as well. So yeah, another good move by them. And
absolutely.
Absolutely. All right.
So yeah, that was it. I mean, that was a lot of stuff, and I tend to talk fast. So hopefully, people can follow along.
Great. I learned it. I learned a ton, and I truly appreciate your time. It was great catching up with you.
And, of course, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.